Hello, this is Ian with the commercial news, dated Wednesday, June 24th, 2020. We'll start our reading on the front page of the paper with the article DACC to Consider Staff Contract by Carol Rome, Danville. The Danville Area Community College Board of Trustees on Thursday will consider ratifying a 4-year contract with the college's classified staff. The tentative contract, which would go into effect on July 1st and run through June 30th, 2024, covers 50 clerical and maintenance workers. The contract provides for a 3% pay raise each year for 4 years. President Stephen Nocco said the negotiations with the Danville Area Community College Classified Staff Association were interest-based. "We negotiated based on what does the college need to do to move forward," he said. "The contract shows the college's commitment and loyalty to the staff," he added. "It was an important gesture to extend it past a year." Some new features of the collective bargaining agreement include an incentive not to use 6 days and a bonus if student enrollment increases by 2% or more. They would earn a half a vacation day for every month they go without using a sick day, Nako said. It addresses a college need and helps with employee availability. The proposed contract also allows for a one-time $500 bonus if student enrollment increases 2% or more in a fiscal year. "We would give them a bonus because they are important in helping students get around the college and are key to retention and student success," Nako said. Also Thursday, the trustees will hear a financial update, hear the president's report, consider a recommendation to adjust the salaries for scheduled employees and professional staff, and for grant-funded administrators and professional staff. "We are in the people business," Nako said. "The quality of the people we have is a measure of the college." A 3% increase to the base pay of DACC employees who are not part of any bargaining unit has been recommended for fiscal year 2021. The proposed increase will help the college remain competitive in attracting and retaining quality employees. The proposed salary adjustment would cover 99 employees, 86 administrative, and 7 confidential. The total cost of the increase is $90,000. The proposed increase is comparable to the increase that the Faculty Association employees will receive in the next year. In fiscal year 2021, faculty members will receive a 2% increase and milestone increases that will bring the total package to a dollar value amount commensurate to a 3% increase. The proposed increase also matches the 3% increase in the tentative agreement with the Classified Association. The trustees will consider a bid of $1.65 million from Commercial Builders of Champaign for the renovation of the Dr. Alice Marie Jacobs Hall and Carnegie Library. The 8,730 square foot former Carnegie Library will include a lobby, two meeting rooms, restrooms, and storage on the main floor. The lower level will contain two meeting rooms, restrooms, storage, and mechanical rooms. Work will start right away if the bid is approved, Nako said. "The bids were well within the $2 million that Julius Hegler bequeathed to us." They will consider approving the fiscal year 2021 capital equipment list for technology and educational support. The funding support for $1.4 million in equipment purchases is possible as a result of $632,000 in technology and equipment bond proceeds, $383,000 in 1994 referendum funds, $227,000 in grant and special revenue funds, and $159,000 from operating funds. They will consider a proposed premium of $156,823 from Illinois County's Risk Management Trust for property liability insurance for fiscal year 2021. They will discuss the Organizational Review of Goals, which is an annual year-end report on the college's performance during a fiscal year based on institutional strategies and departmental goals. The ORG links each of the annual strategic matrix strategies to master plan strategies and departmental goals. The trustees will consider approving the 2021 strategic planning matrix that provides an overview of the college's strategic priorities during the course of an academic year. With the matrix's strategies and tactics, individual departments are able to derive more detailed annual goals. They will consider accepting the retirement of Glenda Hargan, Library Assistant and Technical Services, and they will conduct a special presentation to David Keatsman, Executive Vice President of Instruction and Student Services, who is retiring on June 30th. Next, we'll go to the article, Frenzy Offers Music, Games, by Mary Wyckoff, Danville. Children and adults who have been cooped up lately have a chance to let off some steam this weekend. The first Family Frenzy Day will start at 2 p.m. Saturday at the American Legion Post 210 on Jackson at Prospect. Food will be available starting at 2, followed by music and various activities at 5 p.m. Proceeds will go to the Legion Post 210 and also to the local businesses such as food vendors that participate. The kids have been cooped up, says coordinator Lisa Knapp. Let's give them at least one night of fun. The event will be outdoors, with canopies set up, and precautions will be taken to avoid the coronavirus. Social distancing will be enforced, and hand sanitizer and face masks will be available. People are encouraged to take their temperature before they leave home, and should stay home if they don't feel well. Knapp noted that the state is expected to enter Phase 4 on Friday, and organizers expect some restrictions to be eased. When the event opens at 2, the Legion will be open to serve drinks and food vendors will be open, including Love & Cup Food Truck, Bud's Barbecue, and Big Al's Shake-Ups. At 5 p.m., activities begin. One of the highlights will be a cake sale, featuring 20 to 25 desserts. Among those will be 7 designer cakes made by Mary McKillen. The cake lineup includes strawberry cake with strawberry frosting, a white chocolate drip and white chocolate covered strawberries, orange creamsicle cake with orange cream filling and orange cream cheese frosting, dark chocolate cake with peanut butter frosting, a dark chocolate drip, and decorated with Reese's candy, lemon cake with raspberry filling and lemon raspberry frosting, white sprinkle cake with white buttercream, pink chocolate drip, and lots of decorative sprinkles. Cookies and cream cake with Oreo frosting, chocolate dip, and Oreos to decorate. Carrot cake with cream cheese frosting decorated with toasted coconut and walnuts. People should come early to get these cakes, Knapp said. From 5 to 7 p.m., the Zach Dabble Experience will play rhythm and blues music, followed by Alex Jenkins and the Bombers Blues Band from 7 to 9 p.m. Activities that will appeal to children are Joyful Bubbles, Squirt Guns and Hula Hoops, Laser Swords will be for sale. Raffle tickets will be sold for 2-board cornhole set handmade by Skip Pratt. The set, with a patriotic theme, is valued at more than $100. The set does not include the bags. Drawing for the cornhole set will be at 7:30 p.m. Tickets are $5 each. You don't have to be present to win. At 8:15 p.m., there will be a drawing to announce the winners of a 50-50 drawing, with half going to the person and half to the Legion. Tickets are $1 or 6 for $5. Knapp and her husband, Jeff, volunteer at the Legion. She usually coordinates the Veterans Day 5K run and is on the Legion's entertainment committee. Jeff is a member of the Honor Guard and Sons of the American Legion. About 2 weeks ago, Knapp came up with the idea for a Family Frenzy Day. A motorcycle rally, originally scheduled for this weekend, had been canceled, and a band had already been booked. Knapp thought it would be a good idea to help out the Legion and local businesses, as well as entertain families. The Legion needs to get back on its feet, she said. This is a way to help the Legion and local businesses. The food trucks, for example, will keep their proceeds, but money from other activities will go to the Legion. It's important to support Danville businesses and the veterans, she said. We'll now go to the death notices. Tyrone Tyrell Cunningham Sr. from Danville passed away on June 16, 2020. A private homegoing service that will be live streamed via Facebook will commence at noon on Friday, June 26th at Link & Sons Funeral Home in Danville. Visitation will begin at 11 a.m. until the time of service. A public viewing will be from 1 to 5 p.m. on Thursday, June 25th at the funeral home. Gordon Jean Wilbur, 85, of Armstrong, passed away on Friday, June 19th. Graveside services will be held at 11:30 a.m. on Wednesday, June 24th, at Partlow Cemetery, with Pastor George Desmond officiating. In lieu of flowers, memorials may be made to the American Lung Association. Albert E. Mowes, that's M-O-E-W-S, 78, passed away on Monday, June 22nd. A celebration of Albert's life will be held at 1 p.m. on Friday, June 26th at Sunset Funeral Home and Cremation Center in Covington, Indiana. Visitation will be from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. on Friday at the funeral home. Entombment will be at Sunset Memorial Park in Danville. Mary Diane Egan Hall, 73, of Paris, Illinois, passed away on Thursday, June 18th. Service will be a private mass of Christian burial for immediate family only at St. Aloysius Church in Paris. Memorials may be made to Animal Family Vet Care Center of Paris, Illinois, for those who need financial assistance. Virginia Lee French Seaton passed away on April 20, 2020, in Covington, Indiana. The family will be receiving friends from 1 p.m. Central on Sunday, June 28, 2020, until memorial service time at 2 p.m. Central at Pleasant Grove Bible Church in Danville, Illinois. All are invited to attend. Memorials in Virginia's name may be given to Pleasant Grove Bible Chapel or the Gideon's Organization. And now for some sports coverage, let's head over to the article, Back to Work. Vikings Begin Summer Workout Program, by Chad Dare, Danville. There has been an excitement around the Wayland Young Athletic Facility for the past 2 days. Members of the Danville boys soccer team and the football team have started their voluntary summer workouts under the IHSA Return to Play guidelines. It feels great to get outside, exercise, and get back in shape after 3 months of being quarantined, said Danville senior lineman Brandon McCray. I'm a little sore, but not as much as I expected. McCray was one of the lucky ones. During the quarantine, I had a 35-pound dumbbell at home that I would work out with, and every once in a while, I would jog to the park and back, he said. Some of his teammates were not as fortunate. These first 2 days, we have gotten winded, and we've been dealing with cramps because it's been a minute. But we will get back right. Said Danville senior defensive back Larvell Watkins. It just feels good to get back out here with my teammates and get some work in. We have been off for a long time, and I know a lot of us need this conditioning. Danville senior lineman Matthew McQuown acknowledged that he is one of those players needing these workouts, as these players have been on their own since March 13th because of the COVID-19 pandemic. I haven't really done much, so it was very important to get this started and help get us prepared for the upcoming season, McQuown said. Danville, which has had nearly 60 football players working out in 8 different groups, has 67 days until opening game night against Champaign Central at McKinley Field in Champaign. I'm very worried about the football season, said Watkins. This is my senior year, and football has been one of my highlights of high school. We have several goals for this year, like getting back to the playoffs and trying to go 9-0. The Vikings are coming off a 6-4 season with a 56-20 loss to the Chatham Glenwood Knights in the first round of the IHSA Class 6A playoffs. But first, Danville must navigate its way through the protocols established by the IHSA Return to Play guidelines,
which were approved last week by the Danville District 118 School Board. "It's really pretty simple," McRae said. "They ask you questions about your health and take your temperature, and we must always wear our mask when we are not working out." On Tuesday, Danville football coach Marcus Forrest said things had worked out just fine for the Vikings and that all players have been very healthy. Other requirements for summer workouts are that each group is limited to 9 players and 1 coach. All players are required to bring their own towels and water bottles or sports drinks, and they are not allowed to do any sport-specific drills like throwing the ball around or using blocking dummies. So far, the Vikings have done just basic conditioning drills and plyometrics on the all-weather track at the Wayland Young Athletic Facility. "We did pretty much the same things we did last year," McRae said. "We didn't have weights and we did everything outside. I kind of like it, and I think it got me in better shape for the season." Danville was forced into that position a year ago because of construction work at the high school. This season, it's part of the IHSA guidelines. "We are willing to do whatever it takes to get back on that field this fall," McQuan said. Now let's go to the article, "Pritzker Releases New Guidelines for Return to In-Person Education," by Peter Hancock at the Capital News, Illinois. Springfield. The state has released new guidelines for schools, colleges, and universities to return to in-person learning in the fall, as the state prepares to enter Phase 4 of Governor J.B. Pritzker's reopening plan on Friday. During a news conference Tuesday in Chicago, Pritzker said every school, district, and institution must develop its own individual plan based around common public health guidelines that include limiting group meetings to 50 or fewer people, cleaning and disinfecting facilities, and conducting regular symptom checks. He also cautioned that schools could be forced to return to remote learning in the event of a surge in infections and hospitalizations, or a second wave of the coronavirus pandemic. State Superintendent of Education Carmen Ayala said districts and individual schools will soon send additional information to parents and students. Pritzker first ordered all public and private schools, including colleges and universities, to close for in-person instruction on March 13th, as part of the state's initial response to the pandemic. That was modified on June 4th, when schools were allowed to offer limited in-person instruction and summer school programs as part of Phase 3 of the reopening plan. Dr. Ngoki Ezike, director of the Illinois Department of Public Health, said the reopening being allowed this fall is the result of significant declines in new cases, deaths, and hospitalizations since the peak of the pandemic in Illinois. Those declines, she said, are the result of the vast majority of Illinoisians following basic safety guidelines that include frequent hand washing, wearing face coverings when in public, and practicing social distancing. In advance of schools reopening, Ezike strongly encouraged parents and guardians to make sure their children are up to date on their vaccinations, and that all Illinoisians get caught up on basic wellness procedures, including cancer screenings. She noted there have been steep declines in these procedures since the pandemic began. As of Tuesday afternoon, she said, the Department of Public Health reported 601 new confirmed cases of COVID-19 and 38 virus-related deaths over the previous 24 hours, bringing the statewide totals to 137,825 cases and 6,707 deaths. She said the state has seen 5 consecutive weeks of declining new cases and fatalities. As of Monday, at midnight, there were 1,648 patients hospitalized for the disease, including 424 in intensive care units, 236 of whom were on ventilators. Those all represent sharp declines from the peak of the pandemic in April and May. This story will be updated later. And now we'll go to the article, "Lawsuit: Police Using Virus to Deny Suspects' Rights," from the Associated Press, Chicago. A lawsuit filed Tuesday alleges the Chicago Police Department has used the coronavirus pandemic and recent protests as cover to deny criminal suspects their legal right to speak with attorneys. The lawsuit filed by the Cook County Public Defender's Office and activists from Black Lives Matter Chicago and other groups, says police often refuse to tell attorneys where their clients are being held, and frequently violate a state law allowing suspects to contact attorneys within an hour after being taken into custody. A survey of defendants showed that over a two-month period since the pandemic hit, about a quarter of the defendants reported they had to wait at least 5 hours to make a call, according to the lawsuit. Another quarter of the defendants reported they were never allowed to make a call while in custody at a Chicago police station. The police department has denied and continues to deny arrestees legal representation and telephone access using the COVID-19 pandemic and recent community protests as a cover for their unlawful conduct, the lawsuit alleges. Public defender Amy Campanelli said in the lawsuit that after her office moved to allow attorneys to talk to their clients over the phone instead of in-person visits in an effort to protect the health of both the attorneys and others, the police department subsequently refused to set up a place where defendants and the attorneys could talk privately on the phone. Further, at the same time, attorneys were being told that they could not allow them to speak to the attorneys by phone. The police department's general counsel notified Campanelli's office that her attorneys would have to come to the stations in person in order to meet with clients, regardless of the health risks involved, according to the lawsuit. The city's law department declined to comment, saying it was reviewing the lawsuit, and the police department said it does not comment on pending litigation. But in a letter to Campanelli that was included in the lawsuit, its general counsel explained that while there are rooms where suspects can meet with their attorneys inside the stations, those rooms don't have telephone lines. Further, Dana O'Malley, the general counsel, assured Campanelli that not only are stations cleaned regularly, but the department would be happy to provide the attorneys who come to these stations with masks and gloves for their safety. For some national news, we'll go to the article, Congress Stalls on Policing Overhaul, Despite Public Outcry, from the Associated Press, Washington. Congress is hitting an impasse on policing legislation, as Senate Democrats on Tuesday oppose a Republican proposal as inadequate, leaving the parties to decide whether to take on the hard job of negotiating a compromise or walk away despite public outcry over the killings of Black Americans. The standoff threatens to turn the nationwide protests over the deaths of George Floyd, Breonna Taylor, and others into another moment that galvanizes the nation but leaves lawmakers unable to act. A new Associated Press NORC Center for Public Affairs research poll shows almost all Americans support some sort of degree of criminal justice changes. This is a profound moment. It is a moral moment, said Senator Cory Booker, Democrat of New Jersey, a co-author of the Democrats' proposal. The call is for us to act. Yet Congress, as it has so many times before when confronted with crisis, on gun control or immigration changes supported by broad segments of the population, is expected to stall out, for now. Lawmakers are hesitant to make moves upsetting to voters as they campaign for election. And President Donald Trump, facing his own re-election, is an uneven partner with shifting positions on the types of changes he would accept from Capitol Hill. Ahead of a test vote Wednesday, Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell acknowledged it may fall short. If so, he vowed to try again, hoping to pass legislation before a June 4th holiday recess. It's sad that this is falling along party lines, said Senator Todd Young, Republican of Illinois. I hope that changes. The GOP's Justice Act would create a national database of police use of force incidents, restrict police chokeholds, and set up new training procedures. It is not as sweeping as a Democratic proposal, which mandates many of the changes and would hold police liable to damages in lawsuits. The White House says an immunity provision is off the table. Senate Democratic leader Chuck Schumer and top Democrats signaled they would oppose the Republican bill as not salvageable, as they demand negotiations on a new bipartisan package with more extensive law enforcement changes and accountability, aligned with their own Democratic bill. The Democratic opposition is being backed by the nation's leading civil rights organization and the lawyer, Benjamin Crump, representing the families of Floyd and Taylor, two African Americans whose deaths and police interactions sparked worldwide protests over racial bias in policing. "The black community is tired of the lip service," Crump said in a statement. As talks potentially continue, Democrats are trying to force Republicans to the negotiating table to strengthen Democrats' hand. The House is set to approve the Democrats' bill later this week. The two bills, the House and Senate versions, would ultimately need to be the same to become law. "We're ready to make a law, just not make a point," McConnell said as he opened the Senate on Tuesday. He said Americans deserve better than a partisan stalemate. And finally, for some updates about what's going on in the local area, we'll go to the Community Brief section. In Danville, yoga at Fisher. Yoga classes will be offered on Wednesdays in July at the Fisher Theater. Registration fee includes yoga with a certified yoga instructor, coffee, and a light breakfast. Steph Stevenson will lead you through a yoga routine suitable for all levels on the stage, while listening to movie scores and musical soundtracks. Registration is limited. Yoga mats are available, but people may bring their own. The classes will be from 7 to 8 a.m. on July 1st, 8th, 15th, 22nd, and 29th. Cost is $15 per class, or $50 for all five. Also, DLO Open House. After 64 years, DLO Musical Theater has a home of its own. People are invited to visit Backstage, which will be the new space for box office, rehearsals, set construction, and storage. The open house will be from 2 to 5 p.m. on Saturday, June 27th, at 141 North Walnut Street behind the Fisher Theater. Parking is in the city lot to the west of the building, across Walnut Street. Entry will be limited to no more than 10 people at a time, and face coverings must be worn indoors. And in Potomac, yard sales. The village will sponsor its annual town-wide yard sales from 8 a.m. to 1 p.m. on July 11th. And with those community updates, that's about all the time we have for today's reading. This has been Ian with the Commercial News, dated Wednesday, June 24th, 2020, which also happens to be my birthday. Thanks for joining me today on this beautiful summer Wednesday, and please continue to stay safe.